Cimpegna, mamma di Chihuahua. Cimpegna, mamma.
Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we're going to talk about Disney stuff.
Disney things.
And this week, we're talking about the Lion King.
Lion King.
Which, I'm just going to go on a limb and say is the greatest cinematic masterpiece.
Ever to grace our eyeballs. It is pretty damn impressive, yes.
It was my beyond all-time favorite as a kid.
It was definitely in my top three, yeah.
It's the first movie I ever remember seeing in theaters. Mm-hmm. So my parents didn't tell me we were going. They told me that they were going to an office meeting and had to take me along. Oh. And so I had to, like, bring a coloring book or something so I could sit in the lobby while they went to this office meeting. And so we got there, and I don't know why it didn't look like a movie theater to me, but it didn't. But there was this giant, like, cardboard cutout of Scar in the lobby. And I was like, ooh, I want to work here. Wherever they are, they have giant Lion King cardboard cutouts. And so, but it was a movie theater.
Steve.
Yeah, but it's like, so much a big part of my growing up. Because I had all the, like, bath towels and bed sheets and
you had everything.
Puzzles and toys.
Yeah.
And stuffed animals.
So. I had some Lion King merchandise too. I had some stuffed animals, and I know that we still totally have one of those Lion King cups from Burger King. Yeah.
I have that exact cup.
Yeah.
From that series. But anyway, The Lion King was released on June 15th, 1994, and was released to, you know, insane critical appraise. Wildly successful.
Insane! Yep.
It won 2 Golden Globes for Best Motion Picture and Best Original Score, and also won 2 Academy Awards for Best Original Score and Best Original Song for Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
I totally did not know that Hans Zimmer did the score. I had no idea. And then it was the end of the movie, and I was like, Hans Zimmer, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I knew he did it. I'd obviously not grown up, but, like,
yeah,
because it was one of the first, like, scores that I ever bought.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as a kid, you're not like, oh, I want to listen to just
music, I had it
I
on
think.
Tape. Yeah, yeah, tape.
So I that's where I first recognized the name Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Was from being on the back of the Lion King soundtrack. But also, Circle of Life and Hakuna Matata were nominated. So, you know, it kind of had the music category in 94. Is also, I believe, the still the highest grossing traditional animated movie of all time. And that's also helped because it, you know, was re-released and whatnot. But it was, when it was re-released recently in 3D,
right,
it was released in the number one spot and is the first movie to do that. To be a re-release that opens at number one since Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Cool.
Back in 97 during the special editions. So, yeah. Big deal.
Important and things.
Yes. It is also the first, technically, the first Disney animated feature to be an original story rather than based on an already existing work.
I mean, kind of.
I mean, technically, because clearly there's some Hamlet stuffed in there.
Hamlet.
Also,
Tumblr has recently pointed out to me how much Scar and Mufasa are like Thor and Loki, so now that's all I can see when I watch this movie, and it's very problematic.
I can see that. They've talked to the filmmakers about it being, you know, Hamlet, and they're like, yeah, it's you know, we're not trying to not say that it was based on Hamlet, because we all knew that when we were making it, but it was Joseph and Moses from the Bible, too. Like,
that's true.
It was, so they maintain it is an original story, but, you know, Oliver and Company's pretty close to an original story, too.
Yeah, not exactly straight up not,
It's not the most faithful of adaptations.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it did say, based on in the credits, which yeah. Lion King does not. Lion King was originally conceived in 1988 during the promotion for Oliver and Company. The idea that they wanted to set a movie in Africa, and they decided to do it about lions because, this is the quote in the interview, because lions are cool.
Well, that's good. That's like, good.
Yeah. So, also, this isn't actually that this is fairly well known, but the movie was originally called King of the Jungle, and they got fairly far into production before somebody had to point out, lions don't live in the jungle.
They could have just looked that up, you guys. Did you not go to a library before you named your movie?
No, they didn't. They went to Africa.
They went to Africa.
They went to actual Africa to look at actual lions. But, I mean, that's a thing, lions being the king of the jungle, even
which is
though.
Weird.
I mean, I have no idea where that comes from.
Neither do I.
But there are apparently still some t-shirts and merchandise with King of the Jungle on them. As a tagline rather than as the title, but...
Yeah.
It's interesting.
That's interesting.
Although, the writer, Irene, I think this is pronounced Meki, she came on board and the pitch to her to basically tell her what the story was about was Bambi in Africa meets Hamlet. Which
that's about right, yeah.
So apparently for the rest of the production, she called it Bamblet.
Bamblet. Aw, that's darling.
Is my new favorite name for this movie. But let's jump into the movie. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Lion King opens up with the best opening of a movie ever.
This is going to be this whole podcast, guys. I apologize in advance.
It seriously might. Like, I just wrote, like, yes, and beautiful, and best ever, just all the time.
I tried my best to write down the Swahili. I think I was pretty successful. It was pretty beautiful. Yeah, so it's like a sunrise, and mm-hmm. you see all these animals going across the savanna, and it's really pretty. There's, like, birds and elephants and... My notes just say, there's more to see than can ever be seen, in all caps. Because I was probably singing along and felt the need to type what I was singing.
Yeah, so this is Circle of Life. And it is, so the whole opening is basically everybody's coming to see the birth of the new king.
Yeah.
And originally this was going to be like a really dialogue-heavy sequence. Mm-hmm. With interspersed verses. So when Hans Zimmer was writing the music for this, he wrote it in a way that it would be really flexible to cut and to separate stuff to fit in all the dialogue. And so then when it was presented as this way too long version that was supposed to be cut down, all the animators really liked it and really wanted to animate it. So that's what's in the movie now.
Ta-da!
With no dialogue at the beginning.
Nope.
And so... But it's real pretty, and it's real pretty throughout the whole movie. But like,
this scene in particular is really breathtaking.
I really like the opening with the sun rising and how like the light starts to change on the screen and fall over the scenery and stuff. It's really cool, and it also the animation fits really well with the music.
Yes,
and there's parts of it, and this is kind of recurring throughout the movie, but like. Where some elephants are walking and they're kind of making some of the beats. And there's this really, really cool part when Rafiki does this like triple lift of Simba.
The triple lift. Yeah.
And so it's, you know, and the music crescendos at the right moment and the clouds open up and it's real dramatic looking.
It is. It's true.
So it's an impressive opening.
It is. So yeah, we get introduced to like half the main characters in this opening. Just like, okay, here's Simba and his mom and his dad and Rafiki. Here's everybody. Gonna hang out.
And Zazu.
And Zazu, yeah. they do what I referred to as a child as Ash Wednesday. Because as a kid, that's what I equated it with. Yeah, the ashes on the forehead.
Yeah. Whatever that mango juice is or something.
I don't know what it is. It's not a mango. Can't crack open a mango like that. That's silly, Joe.
I don't know what it is. I mean, I thought it was a coconut as a kid, but like...
It's probably not a coconut.
Rafiki
either.
Has really skinny arms. I don't know if he could like force a coconut in half so nicely.
Yeah, and like coconut milk is like milky, not like red. I don't know what it's supposed to be. Maybe somewhere on the internet, someone's like, I know what that is. And I'm like, awesome. Because I really don't.
So, yeah. As yet unknown African fruit delicacy.
My favorite part of this opening is actually the really severe title. All of the super poetic stuff and the beautiful animals and the beautiful score. And then it's like, title in your face. It's a pretty serious title. I like that.
I like the title. And also, that's the first and pretty much only words on the screen. There's no, starring, produced by, all this stuff. Which we had been getting.
Yeah.
That was in Aladdin's episode, but not in here. Just the title.
Yep.
And it's not even over picture. It's, the screen goes totally black.
And then for the title.
Yep. Yeah. So. And then we're introduced to Scar.
I love Scar.
I like Scar a lot. He is pouting in a corner, pretty much.
That's pretty much all he does this entire movie.
So, yes.
But it's so endearing. And by endearing, I mean evil.
Yeah. Evil. There were, in earlier drafts, Scar was not related to Mufasa.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually undercuts the Hamlet thing a lot.
Yeah, it does.
But that's why they look so different, is because...
Oh, okay.
There was... By the time they decided to... have a brother relationship, all the designs had been pretty much nailed down.
Whoops.
So that's why Scar looks completely different.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's not a lot of familial resemblance there. I mean, he does make reference to the fact that basically Mufasa got the brawn and he got the brains, but they just don't look very similar in general.
Maybe when lions are sickly they get that orange tint of fur.
Maybe.
My favorite part of this scene is when Scar tries to eat Zazu. So Zazu comes to announce that Mufasa is on his way because Scar has apparently skipped the ceremony that morning.
Yeah.
And so Mufasa interrupts him eating Zazu, and so Scar has to make a noise because Zazu's in his mouth. Which always made me laugh.
I really appreciate Zazu so much more now than I did as a child. Like, as a kid, I felt the same way about him that, Simba does. Like, he mostly just annoyed me. But now I find him really, really funny.
Yeah. He's very entertaining. The throw rug line.
Yeah, especially when he's just, talking to Mufasa. He's really funny.
I really like him talking to Mufasa because we get so much of angry Mufasa and stern parenting Mufasa in this movie. So it's really nice to be like, oh, Mufasa has some friends.
Friends.
He has people he can just, pal around with.
Yep.
But the scene goes a long way to set up, how evil Scar is and how he has some overthrowing plans in the works.
Yep.
Because he, kind of gives a lot away here. He also scratches the wall and
he yells on a chalkboard.
If there was one thing I didn't like about this movie, it was that moment when Scar scratched the wall and it set my teeth on edge.
Yep.
And so and we get this really, really quick scene with Rafiki basically sitting in his painting tree.
He lives in a baobab tree. They're the only trees that grow on African savannas. I know this from The Little Prince.
He has, gourds hanging and some turtle shells. A lot of kind of shaman things.
Stuffy stuff.
Yeah. But mostly for this scene, it's just that music score that's going on while it's raining.
Seriously.
Is so good.
It is really good.
So there's about four times where I'm just like, oh, this music. This is such good orchestral score, and this is one of them. So just this whole sequence, I love this music.
And then we get a little Simba.
We do.
Little
we get little Simba. Waking up Mufasa.
I love this sunrise. Scene because what kid didn't run into their parents' room at some point? Be like, hey, we gotta go do something at like 6 a.m. Hey, it's time for stuff.
I do really like also Mufasa and Sarabi talking.
He's your son before 4 a.m.
Yeah, before sunrise, he's your son.
Yep, perfect.
But so apparently they're going to talk about the kingdom things. This is the thing. I didn't notice this as a kid, but they go to like the top of Pride Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought they were just sitting on the Pride Rock part of Pride Rock.
Yeah.
But there's this whole spiral thing that
yeah,
goes
they're
all
like
way
up
the
there.
Dangerous top part, and that's where they are at the end of the movie again. So
yeah,
I noticed it later, but for the longest time watching it as a kid, I thought they were just chilling on Pride Rock. So, but this is where the everything the light touches is our kingdom.
Yeah.
Except for the shadowy place. Where Simba must never go.
Yep.
And so for this whole sequence, we get a lot of like really deep philosophical circle of life stuff.
Yes, we do. Although I would like to tell Mufasa that their bodies don't actually become grass. That would be weird. Your bodies become part of the dirt, I guess, which
bodies
grows
feed the
grass. But your bodies can't become grass seed to grow
I'm
grass.
I'm sorry. The lion doesn't fully understand advanced biology.
That's not advanced biology. Oh, I've only taken like one biology course ever.
That's probably more than the lion has.
Maybe. But it's not advanced.
I think we should all be impressed that the lion is talking about the delicate balance of nature.
That's true.
And is saying, first off, is talking.
Yeah.
And then is saying more than nom 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 antelope nom nom nom.
That would be a really funny movie, though. So Zazu comes in with the morning report, which is sometimes a song and sometimes not a song, depending on which version you're watching.
In the platinum DVD, they added in this morning report song, which is okay, but I mean, we compared it to Human Again when we did Beauty and the Beast, but it doesn't fit as well as Human Again did.
No, is it from the musical?
It was written for the musical, yeah. Okay. So, but you know, but Human Again was written at the time of the rest of the songs for the movie and then taken out. This one was not an original intent in the movie, and then was so it does feel kind of like crammed
stuck
in there.
Yeah.
Plus there's a different Simba singing.
Yes.
Since Jonathan Taylor Thomas was all grown up.
Yeah, he wasn't like 10 anymore.
Right.
Oh, Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
And it does like alter part of it. So there's this whole pouncing lesson for Simba that kind of gets pushed aside for the song. Where he still pounces, but there's this whole bit where Zazu has to stand there and be his pouncing target.
Yep. I like that part.
I do like that part, and that goes away.
Oh,
in the pouncing lesson.
Zazu gets interrupted because this animal comes to talk to him, and it looks like a gopher. They have gophers in Africa? I think that's a... What is that?
It's a groundhog.
It's a groundhog?
It's credited as groundhog.
Oh, well. I like that you know that.
Yeah. It was originally going to be a naked mole rat. But the
Disney naked mole rat foreshadowing.
They changed it, and somebody asked them why they changed it, and one of them said, "Well, we were trying to get the look of the naked mole rat, right? And well, we would have lost our G rating."
That's terrible and funny at the same time.
So that's why it's a groundhog.
Yeah, that just looked really out of place with, like, you know, the zebras and stuff.
Yeah.
Then we get a short scene with Scar and Simba.
Yes, the groundhog comes to tell Mufasa that hyenas have entered the Pride Lands.
Right.
Which I could never decide if that was, like,
purposeful?
Part of Scar's plan.
I would say it was.
At the beginning. Or if, you know, just sometimes the hyenas you know, toe the line a little bit.
Maybe a little of both.
Yeah.
And my favorite part about this scene is that he treats him like anybody would treat their uncle. Yeah. He's just like a kid, so he doesn't really understand complex familial relationships. They're just like, hey, Uncle Scar, how are you doing?
He doesn't understand that his uncle, like, loathes him.
Yeah, basically. And he tells him about the elephant graveyard.
Yeah, I really like this scene because it does feel very natural the way Scar mentions the elephant graveyard and brings it up. So it's not like he does. It's very obvious that he intentionally mentions it and plays it off as, oh, did I mention that?
Oh no.
Well, that was a mistake. But he does it really well. He doesn't do it like a comical cartoon villain would. So it's really impressive. It makes him look like a smart villain, which we don't always get. But I think Scar is one of the more intelligent of Disney villains.
He's very conniving, yeah.
Yes. He thinks out his plans very thoroughly.
Yeah.
So, he's danger.
We get to meet Nala next.
Yes, Nala is getting a bath from Sarfina.
Oh, is that her mom's name? I never knew
that. Yes, it's never mentioned.
Oh, well, that's good.
It's also just credited. But I had Lion King trading cards as a kid.
Oh, so you knew all the names.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I knew Surabi, which a lot of people don't, I've discovered, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
Nala's mom. Interesting.
So, it actually might not be pronounced like that way, since I've only read it off of Burger King cards.
I do know.
I think so.
I love in this conversation where Simba's trying to convince Nala to go with him, and he's having to convince her without talking about where they're going. And because he's like a kid, he's like, "We're going near the waterhole."
I really like that Simba is so much of a kid in this scene.
Yeah,
I really like not liking to take a bath. Feels like his mom is messing up his cool look that he's worked so hard to cultivate.
Yep.
And so, they do get their parents to let them go to the quote-unquote water hole.
Yep. But they have to bring Zazu.
Yes.
What I really enjoy about this is that poor Zazu gets stuck babysitting. He is, what does he call himself? The majordomo. Of a kingdom, and he has to go take care of the kid.
I mean, that's probably not unheard of.
No, but it just seems
if you have like a
silly.
Little granny prince, it's like,
seems silly.
Who can we pawn this off onto?
Yep. And he has this little conversation with them about how they're betrothed. They don't know what that means. And then he has to explain it to him. And I'm like, how exactly do lions get married, I wonder? I assume that it's got to be this big ceremony, because when Simba was born, they had a big ceremony.
You think all the animals in the kingdom are invited?
I guess so.
I don't know. I've never been invited to a lion wedding.
That's really a shame. So, we should do something about that. We should have more lion friends.
But this leads into Just Can't Wait to Be King.
I love this song.
Which, I really like this. I really like the animation for this song.
I like how all the background changes. I really like that sort of stylistic change. It's really cute.
There was talk originally of having the whole movie in that style, like very stylized with, but natural looking animals, but with the kind of like the African patterned backgrounds and stuff.
It looks kind of like batiking.
Yeah. So I'm glad they didn't because of all the majestic landscape scenes.
We would have missed so many pretty backgrounds. I mean, not that they wouldn't be pretty, but it'd be very different.
Yes, it would be very different. But it's like, it's a really fun song. It's a really catchy song. And it's really cool to see this animation for this song specifically.
Yeah.
It's great characters. It's really fun to see all the animals dancing and having a good time.
Yep.
But it has resulted in the worst video game level in the history
so
of video
hard.
Games. If you've ever played The Lion King for either SNES or Sega Genesis, the Just Can't Wait to Be King level is, first of all, it's the second level in the game.
Yep.
And it's so unreasonably difficult.
It's so hard.
Like, I have, like, even just watching the movie now, I was like, oh, they're riding ostriches. I don't much care for that.
Nope. This seems like a bad plan.
Is that a giraffe? Don't trust that giraffe. I know what they do.
Yep. And then Zazu gets smushed by a rhino, so they get out without him.
Yes.
And they go to the elephant graveyard, and it's creepy.
There's the scene where the rhino sits on Zazu, and all the animals run away, except for one giraffe, which I've never noticed it before this time, but this one giraffe kind of hangs out in the corner and doesn't leave the screen. And I was like, oh, that giraffe just, like, something caught its interest, maybe. I was like, oh, look at this tree.
Oh, are we done with the musical number? Look at this leaf, you guys. There's a leaf. It looks delicious.
But then we go to the elephant graveyard.
It's creepy. It's still creepy. This is, like, based on truth, right? I'm pretty sure the elephants all go to one place to die. Like, they know where they're supposed to go.
I have seen pictures of, like, large piles of elephant bones and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope there is some truth to that.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I remember reading about it somewhere, but I don't remember thoroughly.
Yeah.
But, yeah. That makes it especially creepy.
So they see this large elephant skull, which, by the way, weirdest toy I had was that elephant skull action figure.
That's very strange, Joel.
I had all the other ones. Like, I still had the Mufasa and the Scar action figure and stuff,
yeah.
But in addition to that, I had
the elephant graveyard
skull and some additional miscellaneous bones.
Oh, that's good. At least you didn't just get the skull. there's a really nice bit of animation here when they first get to the graveyard, and there's this, like, pan out shot of them in the graveyard, where they do some interesting pupil dilation, which sounds really stupid, but, like, Nala clearly looks scared, and Simba really looks really excited. Like,
yeah.
One of you seems like a more reasonable child right now. And the hyenas come out.
Zazu shows up. Zazu shows up and tries
yes.
to get them to leave because they're outside of the bounds of the Pride Land.
Shenzi, who is voiced by Whoopi Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Banzai and Ed, who is the crazy one.
Yeah. Banzai is Cheech Martin.
Oh, is it? I totally didn't even notice.
Yeah. Originally, Banzai and Shenzi were supposed to be Cheech and Chong.
Oh.
But Tommy Chong, they couldn't get a hold of him. So
that's the second Disney voice acting credit for Cheech, isn't it? Because he was
Oliver
and Company.
Oliver and Company.
That is so
yeah.
weird.
and by the way, Jim Cummings was Ed,
who
I think was also a Boo.
Yes.
So who makes all of our
weird
animal noises. Exactly.
And
so they start to taunt Nala and Simba.
They try and run away, and Zazu says, oh, look at the sun. It's time to go. And that still makes me laugh. That's so silly.
What I really like is that the hyenas crack themselves up so much.
They laugh at themselves all the time.
Yes. Apparently, some, like, hyena... proactive hyena, like, companies or
hyena
organizations,
activists.
Yes, are really mad at Lion King and have tried to sue Lion King for defamation of character.
Aww.
On behalf of the hyena.
I never thought that all hyenas were terrible as a kid. I just thought that those hyenas were terrible.
Well, I mean, all the other ones come in later and...
I guess so, but I never thought that, like, all of the hyenas in the world were awful.
I know, it didn't make me hate hyenas, but... I will say I did think hyenas were pretty, like, dumb comic relief animal kingdom characters. And
which
apparently,
is totally not true. They're pretty scary.
Apparently, like, when compared to lions, they are generally considered to be as smart as or smarter than lions.
Yeah.
And also have less infighting in their packs. So hyenas are pretty cool in the real world, apparently. But these guys just entertain themselves, which I really like, since they have to laugh. They have to have the hyena laugh, and so
yeah,
I do like I do like that part of the hyenas. And they're making jokes, and they're so busy making jokes and entertaining themselves that Simba and Nala get away.
They get Zazu, though, and they put him in the body boiler.
Yeah.
There's, like, this weird volcanic area in the elephant graveyard, which is strange.
I'm not sure what that is. It's just, yeah.
It's a geothermically active area. Yeah, I used a big word in the podcast.
Sure, exactly. You say so.
Yeah. Like, not necessarily volcano stuff, but, like, you know, definitely water and steam bubbling up from the earth. So.
Yes. So they get trapped in, you know, they kind of come to a dead end in the elephant graveyard. And are about to be killed by the hyenas when Mufasa comes to rescue him. And there's this really cool kind of like sound audio bit where Simba can't roar.
He's too small.
At the volume he wants to. But then when he tries to roar, Mufasa's battle roar comes in, which looks like it's coming out of Simba, which is really cool.
It's also really interesting, like, reversal of the standard, like, dog and cat relationship.
Yes. The hyenas do, like, whimper a lot like dogs.
Yeah.
A lot. And so, yeah, to see this very, very big cat come in.
Yeah.
Because Mufasa, like, beats them pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's about, pretty like, soundly. Six times their size, so that
yes.
helps. There's a nice little moment that I totally hadn't noticed before, but as they're leaving, Mufasa's, like, really angry with Simba, obviously, and Nala says, "Well, I thought you were brave," and I was like, "That's really nice, Nala. I never noticed that little line before." She says it really softly.
Yeah. But, yeah, as they go away, we get a quick pan up to see Scar had been watching the whole thing and is angry, so we get more foreshadowing and giant hints that Scar is the villain of this movie.
Yep. There's a really, really, really pretty horizon shot here. They do a lot of really nice shots that are, like, right on the horizon line, mm-hmm. which works really well for the big, big open expanse of Savannah. And oh, man. I love this whole scene for Simba being like, "Oh, Dad's gonna yell at me." So there's a, Mufasa tells, Zazu to take Nala home.
Yes.
And
I do like that he says, "I have to teach my son a lesson." This is line. And
Simba
so, like,
gets this face, it's like, oh.
And so he has to, like, slink up and...
Yeah. There's a really nice moment as he's coming towards Mufasa where he, like, falls into his footstep.
Yeah.
His paw print, I guess, in the sand.
So, I mean, this scene is one of my favorite father-son relationships in movies. It's very understandable and believable, even as a kid, you know, how Mufasa was mad at him because he was worried about him.
Yeah.
And it's a thing where I don't think it gets right a whole lot of time, where I can see simultaneously
both sides.
The anger and the worry and the love of a father for his son. And I think that was done really, really well in this scene, in this dialogue, and just the tone that the voices have for it.
Yeah.
So.
And then he says, "Disappointed."
Mm-hmm.
And all of my childhood feels. I'm not angry at you, I'm just disappointed. Like, oh, that's the worst thing ever. It was at this point in the movie that I realized how James Earl Jones is simultaneously pretty much the best and worst dads in all cinematical history.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. When you compare.
He just has such a fatherly voice, I suppose.
I guess so. A friend of ours, Claire, said that she had tried to show her niece The Lion King recently, and she totally just thought it was Darth Vader the whole time. So Mufasa, she immediately assumed, was the bad guy.
I remember being very scared of Mufasa as a kid. I mean, partially because he was angry for so much of the time that we saw him. And so, and also, yeah, he has this very stern voice, even when he's saying nice things and laughing and having a good time. He's very stern about it. But we get this scene about this little speech about how the stars are the great kings of the past looking down and guiding us.
This is the second dialogue in which we get more dying foreshadowing, in case you're keeping count.
Yes.
I don't know how I missed all this as a kid. This isn't even...
I don't know. I don't remember
every time
seeing
we talk
it the first
to Mufasa,
time, is the thing.
Every time we see Mufasa, he's talking about dying. Okay.
But seriously, you could do this whole little mini philosophy college course on just things that Mufasa says in this movie. You should get a credit. You should get a college credit for watching this movie.
Oh, that's silly.
That's pretty much all he talks about.
Next is
Scar and the hyenas.
Yes.
Where the hyenas are licking their wounds from the beating that Mufasa has just given them. And it continues through. They're just entertaining themselves even in their mopey, sad state of existence.
Yep.
Just making jokes and cracking wise. And so this is the song where Scar fully reveals his plans to kill Mufasa and Simba to become king.
This is probably my favorite villain song. It's so good.
This is such a good villain song. Jeremy Irons is so cool.
I love Jeremy Irons. He's so good.
But he didn't get to sing all of the song because he threw out his voice.
Right. His voice got messed up.
Yeah, during "You Won't Get a Sniff Out of Me," that line messed up his voice. So, when I was a kid, the very, very first time I saw this movie, I thought that this song meant that Scar had magic powers because he was able to manipulate the ground and the steam to work out for him.
Magic lions.
And it's not completely unreasonable since there is definite, like, mystic supernatural things going on later in the movie.
Yeah.
But I thought, I was like, what a weird thing to do, Scar, to not use your magic to help you win this fight at the end.
Fabulous.
So, and then my dad had to be like, well, maybe Simba had magic because there was magical colors dancing around during Just Can't Wait to Be King.
Ah, and so, your dad is clever.
I understood now that, like, oh, so nobody has magic.
Yep. So. If Simba has magic, then clearly no one else has magic.
It's not real magic.
This is also
the scene that introduces all of the other hyenas. This army of hyenas goose-stepping their way across the... I guess they're still in the elephant graveyard. There's still a lot of bones and whatnot. Although there are skulls that are definitely not elephants.
No, that's true. But I think that's where the hyenas eat, so they just drag their prey there. Or whatever. They're like zebra skulls or...
Some antelope stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And now it's time for the sadness.
So this opens up on this canyon, and now this canyon, I was like, oh, look at that wide shot.
I don't want to look at that wide shot.
So pretty. It's a shame this scene has to end the way this scene ends. I could hit pause anytime watching this movie. Print out that frame and frame it and put it on the wall, and it would look good.
I am 90% sure that there's some weird looking lion faces in between animation there.
I don't know.
I gotta go find your screen cap, but I gotta print it out. I'm gonna send it to you. Here, Joel.
Send it to me with the frame. I'll hang it on my wall.
I got you this for your wall. You'd be like, I don't know, Zazu's butt or something. Perfect.
There is that one scene where all the zebra butts go up.
Yeah, zebra
even
butts.
Even that, it's nice symmetry. It's nice symmetry on that frames.
Well, as long as the zebra butts are symmetrical, it's totally fine.
It's real pretty.
Okay, so we all know what's gonna happen now.
Scar is setting up Simba where he needs to be for the stampede. By the way, the stampede took the CG department 3 years to animate.
That doesn't surprise me.
So, and they had to specifically write a new program just for this scene.
Right.
To make sure that these generated computer animals did not collide into each other.
Right.
So, is it looks good. It looks so good. Next thing is, especially the beginning of this stampede, where they pour over the side and there's this zoom in to Simba.
Yeah.
That is really, really impressive animated camera work. This is another part where the music is just so, so good.
So good.
This song is called To Die For on the soundtrack, and it's so impressive. It's very, very tense. It's dramatic, and it's well made dramatic. But it does end with Mufasa. Scar lets Mufasa know that Simba is trapped in the gorge, and Mufasa comes to the rescue. And so, I'm getting a little choked up, I honestly am.
I'm sad!
There's this really impressive scene with Mufasa in the canyon. The animation is very good there, and especially in comparison to, there's this one shot of Scar like walking along the edge, watching everything take place. And to me, that's the best image, the best moment of Scar kind of being above everything,
yeah,
and watching his master plan and his, you know, puppet work basically go into effect. And so he's still present to make sure things are going according to plan, but is above it all and is not getting his hands dirty in this,
right,
in this thing. So it's very quick, very subtle, but it's this really impressive shot of Scar that I really like. And then after saving Simba, Mufasa crawls up and Scar basically forces him, pulls him off of the cliff so that he falls back down into the wildebeests.
Yep.
And yeah, I was like, oh, I am a college graduate. and I'm crying the way I did when I
have a college degree.
Old.
Why is this so upsetting? I am old. And it is still sad.
It choked me up, and it's very realistic. It's as realistic as talking lions can be.
Yes.
But it's a thing where I can totally see Simba's reaction happening in real life to,
yeah,
someone who's come upon this, and it's incredibly heartbreaking.
Yep.
And so Scar shows up and convinces Simba basically that this is all
his fault.
Yes.
And then he tells the hyenas to kill him.
Yeah, he tells Simba to run away.
That doesn't quite work, because there's a giant thicket of thorny bushes, and Simba gets through them, and the hyenas don't.
Yes. It surprised me on more recent viewings, as I was older, how close this scene is to Mufasa dying.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's still kind of funny. Like,
yeah,
he gets thorns in his butt. Which was funny to me as a kid, and they called Bonsai Cactus Butt.
Yep.
Which, you know, it's a funny name. So it's really surprising how close this was to the saddest scene in film. So Scar returns to Pride Rock.
Yep.
Declares everybody dead, declares himself the new ruler, and
brings in the hyenas.
Yes, hyenas are now part of your ecosystem. Basically ruining the circle of life. That's what he did there.
Basically. Apparently. So.
Well, they harp on it the first half of the movie, how delicate the circle of life is.
I know.
The whole song, all this philosophy.
The ending dealing with that was a little silly, but we'll get to that later. So there's a really sad shot of Rafiki where he smudges out Simba, his painting on his tree. And then we meet Timon and Pumbaa, which is happy, because Timon and Pumbaa are happy.
So Simba, well, first of all, Simba's in the desert near dead with Buzzard, so that's not that happy.
Whatever, Timon and Pumbaa!
Then Timon and Pumbaa run in. I really like their relationship. Even just them, like, I like Simba fine in the trio, but I like these guys
like
hanging
them
out.
Yeah.
And I really like Timon. Timon was my favorite as a kid.
Yeah.
He's basically got this whole used car salesman personality.
That's true. That's a good equivalent.
I stole it. that's what.
Jeez, Joel.
That's what Nathan Lane called it in a Disney Adventure magazine in June 1994. So
it's good that you know that.
Yeah, I have that one.
That's so good too.
I really like Lion King, by the way. Have I mentioned that?
I might be able to tell. Yes, I might subtly suspect that. Yes, I love Timon and Pumbaa. So Timon and Pumbaa find him in the desert, and there's this lovely little exchange where Pumbaa is basically trying to convince Timon that they should keep him like a puppy.
Yes.
He like wakes up.
Yes. They wake up. They find some water somewhere.
They've got water in their little oasis.
There's some sort of oasis. Yeah. I'm really curious about how the whole landscape of their, you know, with the Pride Lands.
That seems
in one part.
Very and then strange.
This desert, and then this other beautiful paradise area.
Yeah.
But Nala later seems to get there through tall grass instead of through desert area.
I don't know. It's confusing.
Me neither.
But and then Hakuna Matata time.
Hakuna Matata comes up. Song of all songs.
Yes. And it's a delightful little musical number. And in the process, Simba gets older. Oh, wait. We're talking about bugs first, don't we?
Yes. First is how to eat bugs.
Yes. I do not think that a male lion could grow to full size on bugs alone. But maybe that's just me.
There are a lot of bugs.
There are a lot of bugs.
I know that
but
everywhere they opened up, there was like 40 gajillion bugs.
But you would have to eat a lot of bugs in order to equal like an antelope.
And these are also scary African jungle bugs.
They are weird bugs.
So
I do not
like
them.
It's not like some ant that you see crawling across the kitchen floor. These things have like pincers and like extra legs sticking out that you could eat and like, you know, full body fat. Yeah, these are intense bugs.
But yes, in the process of the song, he grows old.
He does grow old in the world's longest log.
Yep. And now it's Matthew Broderick.
Yes. And he changes from Jonathan Thomas into Matthew Broderick.
That's an interesting progression.
My favorite part in this song, well, when I was a kid, my favorite part was when we learned about Pumbaa and his flatulence problem.
First fart joke in Disney movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took him a while.
Times are a-changing.
Yeah, apparently.
But other than that, there's this one scene where they all jump into the water and, you know, like just having fun, playing around, jump into the water. And Pumbaa does this, like, 10-point perfect dive with nary a splash. Which
it's perfect.
It's like, yeah, it's a small thing, but I really liked it.
And then we get a cut back to Scar.
Yes, to Pride Rock, which is getting disparagingly pathetic looking.
Yeah, and Zazu is encaged in a rib cage, which is both ironic and really weird for a children's movie, but okay. And he sings Small World, and then Scar doesn't like it, and then he sings
Yes.
I've Got a Lovely Bunch of Coconuts.
Well, he sings Nobody Knows
Right.
My Sorrow.
He wanted a happier song.
Yes, but not Small World.
Not Small World.
I
like it when Disney makes fun of itself.
There's also a little bit where Scar picks up a skull and sings to it,
yes.
York style.
It's true.
So I'm like, oh, look at that. Hamlet joke.
I see what they did there.
But the main point of the scene is to let everyone know that basically all the food is gone. Scar is doing a poor job maintaining the balance. Everybody's hungry. And things are not very good under Scar's rule.
Yep. I do like in this scene how they totally noted that male lions are absolutely useless at hunting. That was nice. Because they're really,
the lioness's job?
Really not. The lionesses are the ones who do pretty much everything. Yep.
Yeah. He did say the lioness's job. And he seems to indicate that the lionesses just won't hunt out of like protest or something. Which I'm not sure if that's true or if that everything's been hunted and left.
Yeah.
So. But then we're back with Simba under the stars. It's been another fun-filled day of doing nothing.
Yep.
And so Pumbaa asks, what are all them twinkly things up there?
I love this conversation.
And Timon's response is they're fireflies that got caught in that gray-bluish thing.
This big, big bluish-black thing.
And so Pumbaa says, oh, I always thought they were giant balls of gas floating billions of miles away.
Yep.
And as a kid, I didn't realize that the joke was the fact that Pumbaa was right. I just thought it was that Pumbaa makes talk about gas, and that's funny.
That's good, Joel.
So, it was like, yeah, when I turned, I don't know, 8 or something, it was like a whole new joke.
Yep.
And so,
Simba tells him about his kings of our past look down upon us, and they kind of make fun of him, and then he leaves to go be sad by himself.
Then basically, it works fine in the movie, but it feels weird explaining it. Basically, Rafiki learns through the spirit of nature that Simba is alive.
Yeah. I like to think that Rafiki's just been sitting up in the top of that tree all this time, just being like, what's up with the world? Huh?
Well, he gets all his news via the wind, so.
Apparently.
That's probably what he does.
So he finds out that Simba's alive and he gives him a little mane on his tree, which is cute.
Yeah. He also, I really like it's another really small joke, but he breaks open another one of those mysterious fruit things as if he was going to use it in his incantation. He's like, nope, this one's just for eating.
Awesome. And then we come back and Timon and Pumbaa are walking through their little oasis singing The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
They sing The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
So delightful.
And Pumbaa gets distracted by
a bug.
A particularly tasty bug.
It was big.
It was. And then while he's hunting it, Nala, who I don't know if we're supposed to know it's Nala or not.
We don't know that many other female lions.
It's been so long since I've seen it the first time that I don't know if I knew that or not at the time.
I don't know.
But it's Nala. And she chases Pumbaa, and Simba comes to the rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this kind of vicious fight.
Yeah, it's pretty angry.
Which, you know, I guess lions have.
Yep.
But when Nala pins Simba the way that they did as children, Simba realizes that it's Nala.
Yep.
And they're really happy to see each other because clearly, I thought they're never going to see each other again. Nala thought Simba was dead.
Yep.
And they're really happy. And Timon has the best reaction to the pause in the fighting.
Yep.
And it's still like my favorite part of the whole movie. this little tiny bit. And Timon is going, "What is going on?" And everything has to be explained to everybody about Simba being king. And about how he has this whole kingdom that he's never told him about.
I love how Pumbaa's immediately like, "Oh, your highness." Perfect.
Perfect. He is. And Timon is like, "Wait a minute. You're the same guy, but with power." But the whole scene sums up into Nala basically wants Simba to come back, and Simba does not want to.
Right.
And this leads into Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
I have such mixed feelings about this scene.
I love this scene. I love this whole movie.
The whole thing. Everything.
Okay, to be fair and to be consistent with all my other complaints, as a kid, I didn't like this because it was the slow song.
Slow song.
Okay,
the one moment that I noticed in this one that I hadn't noticed previously, and it made me smile a little bit, they're at like the water and he pushes her in and she like freaks out and I was like,
mm-hmm.
Ophelia drowned to death. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I mean, she probably just wouldn't like water anyway, but to me, it was a subtle nod to Ophelia and how Nala was smart enough to not drown. Not that Ophelia wasn't smart, she just went crazy.
So basically, Elton John and Tim Rice had written this song to be the romantic love song, and then it turns out that the producers thought that it should be a comedy duet between Timon and Pumbaa.
Yes.
And Elton John and Tim Rice are like, what? Wait, what? No, what? That's not it at all. And so then it was taken out for a while. And so then it was like 3 weeks before the movie opened, and Elton John was going to get a preview screening, and it just wasn't in there at all. And so he's like, wait a minute, where's my romance ballad?
Yep.
So it's good that he lobbied hard to get it back in there, because it, you know, won him an Academy Award.
It's true.
So his thoughts are right on the money, but... And I'm really glad now, because I do really like the song, but as a kid, yes. I would have preferred Timon and Pumbaa to sing this song.
I like this scene. Like, the animation is really pretty, the backgrounds are really pretty, but...
Everywhere they go is beautiful.
It's true.
Like,
but
they keep going to different locations.
But there's just too much lion bedroom eyes happening for me to be comfortable.
There is one scene.
It's creepy.
It's fine.
It's creepy.
I've had no problems with it whatsoever.
It's creepy.
Anyway, post-song, which even, you have to say, like, even the song itself is a beautiful song.
It's a nice song,
musically.
Yes. Rafiki shows up. Well, they have a fight first.
Well, they do have a fight, and it's the same fight from before.
Yes. And then Rafiki shows up.
Rafiki shows up with Asante Sana Squash Banana.
Yeah.
Wewe Nuna Miga Habna. Which is Swahili for, thank you very much, Squash Banana. You are a baboon and I am not.
Yes.
So, which is basically just like a schoolyard rhyme, like Cinderella dressed in yellow is for us, like jump rope kind of thing.
But it's ironic because he's a baboon. Well, he's not a baboon.
Yeah.
He's a something.
But I find that out years later, I was like, it really does mean you are a baboon and I am not.
Yep.
which is, you know, felt so random when he said it.
Is he a mandrill? Is that what it is? I don't know.
Sure.
I don't remember.
But he is, he's very entertaining in this scene.
I like him.
And it's nice since we don't get a lot of Rafiki.
Yeah.
But he's kind of, he reminded me a lot of the fairy godmother. Or actually, rather, the fairy godmother reminded me of Rafiki since I saw Lion King first. But they're both the kind of, like, spiritual guidance that feel really prominent in the movie, but...
aren't actually there a lot.
Yeah, they kind of have this one important scene.
Yeah.
And so...
He takes him to this weird, weird, gnarly tree thing. It's interesting. And then they reach this water, and he tells him to look at his reflection, and he's like... it's my face, you weird monkey.
So he tells him that his father lives on inside of him.
Oh, metaphor. And
then we get Magic Ghost Dad.
Magic Ghost Dad in the sky.
And so, and yeah, lots more philosophies going on in here.
Yep.
Where Mufasa, in short, tells him to, you know, fulfill his destiny, go and take his place in the circle of life.
Go home. Yep.
So he tells him, he uses circle of life because that's the whole mantra of the movie. But
metaphor. Yeah,
he tells him to go home, take his place.
Yep.
And then we get Rafiki hitting Simba in the head.
Yep.
Which is this really nice little simplistic but makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Metaphor about the past hurting, but you can learn from it.
I like how he just up and leaves. He doesn't tell anybody he's going. He just runs off. So thankfully, Rafiki comes in later and is like, it's cool, guys. Your friend isn't dead somewhere. He just went to take back his throne.
Okay, I think in Little Paradise Falls area, there's not a whole lot that can, like, kill Simba.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And if he's a lion?
What if he fell off something or drowned?
But he's capable of swimming and Tarzan-style vine swinging. Like,
I don't know.
He's a pretty capable lion.
Still. It's not very nice. You go somewhere.
Well, he's late.
You go somewhere by yourself and you might get hurt. You should tell somebody
like
where you're
going.
He's 5 years
late to Pride Rock.
Whatever.
But yeah, we do get Nala, Timon, and Pumbaa trying to figure out where he is. And there's this whole little who's on first style.
Yep.
Where everybody is confusing each other.
Yep.
Which is really nice. Fast talking. And then we get the return, which this is the other part. I'm like, yeah, music. Because it's real dramatic and real intense. And we get this dramatic running music and then seeing Pride Rock being decimated and taken apart.
Yep.
And just years of neglect.
Sad. And, no rain ever, apparently.
Simba's being real dramatic on his little stump.
Yeah.
So he's found this like area that's kind of Pride Rock shaped so he could stand dramatic style, but it's not actual Pride Rock.
It's pretty silly.
But then Nala comes up and Timon and Pumbaa, and they're all gonna join him and take him back his throne.
My favorite thing about this scene is that there's a shot of everybody like looking at the like terribly tragic destruction of Pride Rock or whatever, and everybody looks like really purposeful and determined, except for Timon, who's like got a smile on his face, like, "Yep, this should be difficult. It's cool." I love that. I never noticed that before.
So they have to sneak past. There's lots and lots of hyenas.
Yes.
And so,
what do you want me to do? Dress in drag and do the hula? Yes.
That line was improvised by Nathan Lane.
That is his
The song was originally going to be Saturday Night Fever disco style dance.
Nope.
But they had to change it to a hula.
Awesome.
So. It's entertaining.
I like that scene.
I don't know if it counts as a song officially of the movie.
It should. My new favorite song.
But it's very entertaining. And it works, by the way. They do successfully sneak past the hyenas.
Yeah.
And then split up for Nala to find the lionesses and for Simba to confront Scar.
But it turns out that Scar calls them Sarabi up to him.
Sarabi.
And
yes.
There's this like really serious scene where he's essentially blaming her and all the other lionesses for all their problems, and Sarabi's just like a awesome badass stand-up lady.
she's being real civil about everything.
She is.
So I really like the fact that when Simba does intervene, the first reaction, Scar's first reaction, is that it's Mufasa.
Yeah.
Because he does look like Mufasa.
Yeah, and he hasn't seen him in so long.
Yeah. I really like the character design between the two,
mm-hmm.
where it is very easy to tell the difference between Mufasa and adult Simba, but at the same time, it's very understandable to see somebody make that mistake.
Yeah.
And to see how these people would be related as a family with weird, different looking Uncle Scar.
So then Scar starts in on Simba and accuses him of murdering his father.
Yes.
But they fight and...
There's this really cool, like, 360 camera spin going on during this interrogation. And so it's really impressive camera work in a cartoon.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
But
yeah, they start fighting and tries to...
Yeah, he has Simba dangling off the edge of a cliff.
Yes, it's very parallel to Mufasa hanging off the edge of a cliff earlier in the movie.
He admits to him that he killed Mufasa, and then like Simba gets up from under the cliff really easily. So that was kind of a bad idea.
Yes, and here's the thing is, earlier in the movie when he was killing Mufasa, it was very impressive as far as villain standards go, because that's where the villain would monologue.
Yeah.
Is, you know, when he's got him on the ropes.
Yeah.
And Scar doesn't. And that's, you know, one of the reasons Scar is such a competent and, you know, threatening villain is that he's like, long live the king, boom, you're dead.
Yeah.
And then he has to go and mess it up this time. He's got to give that little piece of unnecessary information.
Yep.
Just to ruin it for himself.
And then everything's on fire. Because there was some lightning. Yeah.
Yes. Because that happens in Disney movies all the time.
Yep. Lightning. Bad stuff. Yes.
Lightning and fire.
And then they have this circly fight. And in the meantime, Scar blames the hyenas for everything, which was just a bad move on his part.
Yes. I really like just the fight as a whole, how well balanced it is between comedic fighting and very serious themed fighting,
right,
between the lions, but it's balanced out very well with Rafiki beating up hyenas and the whole Mr. Tibbs, Mr. Pig joke.
Yeah.
And so those are all really entertaining, but to me they don't undercut like the importance and the drama of this fight between Lion Scar and fight. Simba. And I really like in the eventual fight, the eventual showdown, that it feels like I can follow the fight, what's going on, and specifically what blows do what things to people.
Yeah.
Like, it feels legitimately choreographed, which not all cartoon fights do.
Especially not all cartoon fights between animals.
Yes.
I'm looking at you, weird rat fight from Lady and the Tramp.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's this really epic face-off, and Scar...
I had this face-off on a shirt.
That's good. It's a good thing to have on a shirt. Scar eventually gets cornered by the hyenas and eaten.
Yes.
That's really disturbing. So. Ugh.
Okay, but at this point in the movie, you know.
Yeah, I know, but there's like this silhouette of him being eaten, and that's pretty disturbing.
Yeah. No, it is. So.
And.
But it's Circle of Life, man.
It starts raining.
It does start raining, because that's what happens when the fight's over in a Disney movie.
Yes, it's true.
And you've set something on fire.
It's true. Gotta put out the fire. And I love this scene because Rafiki looks at Simba like he's an idiot, and he shakes his stick toward Pride Rock, and he's like, "What are you doing, dumbass? Get up there!" Like, oh, you're delightful, Rafiki.
I really like this. And this is the fourth time where the music is like, it's just such good music.
Yes, it is good music.
So, I really like this scene. I really like how it feels earned to me. It feels like Simba genuinely went through serious trials and tribulations.
Yes.
And even though he gets to be king because, you know, he won the birth lottery.
Yep.
Like, it feels like he's earned his kingship, and he's going to be a good and just king.
Yeah.
And so, it's a really touching moment to me. Yes.
And then you get the shot of Fried Rock, and it's raining, and then all of a sudden it's beautiful again. Everything is nice, and I'm like, oh.
Okay. Clearly, time passed.
Well, yeah, but like,
because that's the new ceremony. So, we gotta have all this time for new lions to get born.
It just, it seems weird that Scar's kingdom would just entirely die, and then like a year later, it's totally fine again. That seems strange to me.
Circle of life.
That's a delicate balance. That's a terrible excuse.
That's why they said delicate balance.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, no. Well, what it is that herds migrate, and so they leave Pride Rock during the bad times, and Scar would not leave Pride Rock. That's what Sarabi's saying, is that they need to leave Pride Rock and follow the herds.
Yeah, but then when they don't follow the herds and they stay at Pride Rock, they're apparently totally fine later. There's no indication that they left.
But they were hungry.
But, like, no, I mean, between Simba being on Pride Rock and Simba being on Pride Rock Part 2, there's, like, no indication that they left.
I'm assuming the animals came back.
Why?
Because all the animals are there.
But why?
Because they travel around.
Okay, so basically Scar was a terrible king because of bad timing?
No, because he wouldn't leave Pride Rock.
Okay.
He was too attached to being the king on and at Pride Rock. Where he could stand physically over his subjects and would not adapt to having to move the way that the lion herd does all the time every year.
I guess so. I don't know. It still seems kind of silly.
It is not the most far-fetched thing we've seen in a Disney movie.
No, but that doesn't mean it has to make sense.
Made sense to me when I was 4.
Yeah, lots of things make sense to you when you're 4, Joel.
I don't know why you can't grasp it now.
You also think that Scar had magic, so, you know.
wasn't that far-fetched. Actual still, like, supernatural stuff takes place in this movie.
Well, yeah, but Scar doesn't do it.
No, but there's a magic ghost dad.
Magic ghost dad is weird.
So if magic ghost dads are cool in your movie, then lions having magic powers is not where you would draw the line.
No, I suppose not. So. But yeah, they have a baby, and I don't know. I'm curious if they decided if it was a boy or a girl before the sequel, because it's a girl in the sequel.
It's a girl in the sequel, but there is a book, a pop-out book, where it's a boy.
Oh.
So I'm assuming that, which is obviously not canon now, but...
Yes.
I that would indicate to me that it was a boy, just because there's this whole father-son thing.
I guess so.
Until when writing the sequel, it's quite reasonable to, you know, let's not make the exact same movie again. So
yes.
Here's something we can change. So, no, it's even still, Lion King is near perfect movie for me.
I really enjoyed it. I always really enjoy it. I saw it pretty recently in theaters when it came out again in 3D.
And I really liked it. Does the 3D hold up?
Yes, I enjoyed it.
Since it's post-conversion?
Yeah. It wasn't. So, yeah. The only thing I really don't like about 3D specifically for animated movies is that it makes it darker, like overall.
Because of the glasses?
Yeah, so it doesn't read quite as vibrant, which is part of the appeal of this movie. So that was the only thing I didn't like. The conversion overall was very tastefully done.
So, also, as you know, there's a Broadway adaptation. Which won 6 Tony Awards, and I noticed this looking up to stuff for this, but there's these 4 main Renaissance movies, and they all have 2 sequels and a TV show based on them.
Interesting.
So,
formula.
Yeah. So the Beauty and the Beast TV show like never got off the ground, so it's just like 3 episodes sitting in a vault.
Weird.
I think the. Whatever the not the one that's Tales of Friendship, which I think is called Belle's Magical World.
Yeah.
Whichever one of those is not an official sequel is part of that TV show. But yeah, for those growing up in the right time, Lion King totally had Timon and Pumbaa's adventures.
Yes.
Which was entertaining Saturday mornings.
Yeah, I remember that show.
So and it's part of it is nostalgia because so many of my memories of the first thing as far as movies goes was Lion King. It's the first movie I remember seeing. It's the first movie I remember going to the theaters twice to see. It's the first movie I remember knowing it was coming out and wanting to go see it. And so just like I learned the concept of how movies work with this movie.
Yeah.
I remember being a kid and seeing a commercial that said coming soon to a theater near you. And I was like, I want to see it. And there's no theaters near me. Because to me, near me meant look out the window.
Yep. And there it is. That's how that works. So,
but there actually is a theater pretty close to me on account of cars.
Yeah, moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's how I learned what that phrase means.
That's funny.
All ties back to Lion King. So, I think that's it for me this week.
Yep.
So next week will be Pocahontas, I believe.
Pocahontas.
Going into the next set of Renaissance films.
That'll be an adventure.
So, yeah. I have not seen Pocahontas in years.
I've seen Pocahontas fairly recently.
So, I think I've only seen it once, maybe twice when I did see it, so.
That's because you were not a girl when this movie came out.
I actually was not. I was probably watching Lion King again.
You probably were. No, I saw this movie a lot, and I saw Pocahontas a lot, and I saw it in theaters a lot, and I watched it on VHS a lot. Pocahontas was everywhere.
Well, what's actually really interesting is Pocahontas and Lion King were kind of, like, made at the same time.
Yeah.
But, like, Disney's A-team, like, the higher profile people were all working on Pocahontas because they were all sure it was going to be the higher profile with more awards and more money movie.
Yeah.
And Lion King was made by like the B scrap ragtag team.
Oh.
So I guess they can all be smug hanging on to their statues.
Yeah.
So, but Pocahontas did pretty well too. So
yeah.
It just didn't do Lion King well.
No, that's true. That's pretty much what Disney has tried to achieve ever since then.
Yes.
Lion King well.
Yes. So, once a year, see if we can top Lion King. Well, all right. Till next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody. No worries for the rest of your days. It's our problem-free philosophy. Hakuna Matata.